Good evening, Patriots, and welcome to Fired Up, episode 82, as we slice through the DC dumpster fire. Please forgive us, we are using a new service here for some hiccups. But tonight, despite the media's Rob Gronk tantrum imitation, terrific bad, we're going to decode Trump's approval ratings that are swinging higher than his hair in a windstorm. That's pretty high. Then James Comey's Seashell 8647 post, spoiler alert people, it's not B-Chart, it's a Trump threat. Then we'll follow those shady seashells to expose the mainstream media's cover-up of Biden's brain fog, now a bestseller for shameless journals. And those shameless journals themselves are now suffering brain fog too, stating the Biden admin fooled them. Please! And don't miss New Jersey Dems turning an ICE facility into their personal WWE ring. I may have to jump on in there. So gear up like I did in my fireman stripper days, because this roller coaster of hypocrisy and chaos will make you laugh, rage, and maybe punch a damn wall. Hey, hello, everybody. I guess we are back. Woo, talk about some hiccups there. And I am here with my co-host, Mr. G-Man, who the supervillains have gotten to the G-Man, people. They've attacked his throat. How you doing, G?
But I think I can manage for a segment or two. But, yeah, it's been a rough week for me. But you know what? I will put my construction worker stripper days up against your fireman stripper days any day of the week, I tell you.
Oh, man. We just get Big John there, our producer tonight, as the hairy Greek, and we're going to challenge the village people. Oh, man.
So, gee, are you sure? The policeman stripper?
Yeah. Are you sure? That'll be for Armin, who will join us. We have a special guest, Armin Kurdane, will come on. For those of you not aware, Armin came on. I kind of feel bad for Armin G the first time he came on, because I was so well versed with the Ukraine issue. I've been reading up on it for a few years. I think he may have felt like he'd been a gangbang, that's not the right term, with Annette and I pounding him left and right. But that said, G, are you sure it's not a Pakistani attempt there to take your throat out?
I would love to do a segment on Kurt Weldon one day, who is a former U.S. representative charged with investigating some of the 9/11 stuff, because he talks about some interesting stuff, and some of it is planting diseases and cancers. It's crazy, and this guy is completely believable, so we'll have to do that show one day.
I'm sure Alex Jones has had him on InfoWars then. I'll say this about Alex Jones. It makes no damn sense. You know, I had never listened to Alex Jones until last year. Somebody said, listen to his take on 9/11 before it happened. And I'm like, the guy was spot on from beginning to end. It's as if somebody gave him the script for 9/11, and it was like color by numbers, and he got it all right. It was incredible. And I think it was Big John went about it, or somebody about it, who says, well, you know, he just got lucky. I'm like, no. This was like every detail. I was like, holy mackerel. This wasn't like you throw out stuff and 90% of it's wrong and that 10% hits. This was like from 1 to 10 it hit. But with that said, G, I don't want to wear your throat hair out with the chit-chat here. So to our producer, you're more than welcome to join us here, Big John. As I said, we're using a new service tonight to live stream, so bear with us here for a few hits. But we got a great show. We got a great show for you guys tonight. We're going to talk about, and I was stunned. I was stunned doing my research this week. Trump's ratings have just, his polling numbers have jumped up. And I'll be honest, I'll give G and myself props. We know why they jumped up. We know the tariff, you know, the, as I said, the Gronkowski imitation from John. What's that? comedian's name that was on the Tom Brady bash that said
Nikki Glaser.
Nikki Glaser, when she looked over, even Gronk. That was funny as hell. But anyway, so I'll give us props to you. We got it right. It's in fact, I think I told you, Big John, you know, you can't look at this stuff from a static perspective. I saw whether it's going to work or not. I'm not going to say I think it will. But there's always risk. But gee, we got it right looking at it from the perspective of a strategic plan he was putting in place, the tactics. And I guess this is where Big John usually says, well, we're bullying. I think in this case, we are properly and righteously bullying because we had the leverage. And, gee, we figure that out quickly in searching the numbers. And that's what I like about Scott Bissett. Scott Bissett was able to put all of that in layman terms where you know, it was easy to understand. And then you know me, I'm anal. I took Bissett, his whole speech, and I researched it and found the numbers and found the data. So we were pretty spot on. And I think the country's feeling that right now. And then from there, we're going to talk about James Comey, obviously. And there's no way James Comey did not sit there and go, oh, I didn't know that was a threat. The guy's the FBI director. He knew it was a threat. And then we're going to talk about the big story of the week is Joe Biden's dementia. We all knew he had dementia. We all knew what was happening to him. Now, all of a sudden, it seems like the mainstream media and Jake Tapper has dementia. You know, because they're like, I didn't see it. Only a moron doesn't see it. And then we're going to close it out with WWE, Big John and Mine's old pastime growing up, loving wrestling. But this time it's some Democrats that are out there in New Jersey getting all physical with the ICE agents. And on all these stories, it's not necessarily a snapshot in time, fellas. It's about the process, the slow destruction of a nation from within. You know, you have – I know Big John's good on the technicalities, but sometimes, as Amy Chua, the Tiger Mom, says, the destruction of the country from within is done slowly, and they use our own laws against us. That happened to the Greeks. It happened to the Romans. Most people don't know by the time the Roman Empire fell, like 90% of their army was made up of mercenaries. And the Revolutionary War, the Germans, by the end, their army was made up of Hessian. That's why people don't realize we don't have a formal official English language because there were so many Germans in America at the time, and a lot of them settled in. So let's get to it here. So as of Friday, May 16, 2025, Donald Trump's approval ratings, they have unexpectedly surged, and they defied predictions of decline. I'll admit I was a little shocked. So this shift is highlighted not by a pro-Trump polling center, but by Harry Enten, who's quickly becoming quite the personality here in the news media, and he's for CNN because he doesn't go by the CNN doctrine, hate Trump. He kind of calls it how he sees it. So what we're going to do, my friends, is I'm going to play snippets of Harry's podcast here. Let me find this again, people. Forgive us, we're a little new to this. So let me hit share here. Do I hit add scene? Right? Oh, yeah, I add scene, media, screen. All right, I hope everybody can see that. I'm going to play this for about 30 seconds here. You guys feel free to comment here, and then we're going to dissect it, and I want your guys' analysis, all right?
Sounds good.
I think it's time for a bit of a reality check, right? We were going to late April. Donald Trump's approval rating, his net approval seemed to be falling. He seemed to be adios amigos. People were writing his political obituary. He is rising from the dead. Look at this. Hello, Trump's net approval rating among voters. This is the Reuters Ipsos polling. Look at this. In late April, he was 8 points underwater. But look at where he was in the most recent poll among voters. He's up 7 points to a minus 1 point net favorability rating. This is not the picture I think a lot of people were thinking that we would be painting in late April. I think a lot of people expected his approval rate to keep dropping. But at least according to Reuters Ipsos, it's in fact right.
All right. Let's see this. All right, gents. Initial thoughts on that, G, when you see his numbers. I mean, Shies, what's your thoughts?
I'm not surprised, but as we talked about and predicted accurately back in April, the early April, if you look at what Trump did out in the Rose Garden with his chart, if you looked at that as policy, then you were struggling. You're selling the stock market. You're freaking out. You're not sleeping at night. But if you looked at it as negotiation and basically the art of the deal, then you could sleep better at night. And you knew that we're not, that's not the goal. The goal is to reset the global order to 10% tariffs across the board for everything coming into the U.S. And then you were sleeping well at night. You would have held on to your stocks. And I believe we're break even on the market since Liberation Day.
Big John, at the end of the day, the art of the deal supposedly says you go and ask for, you start out over the top. And there's been other books that have talked about that. I have never negotiated that way. But that seems to be what kind of has happened here. And it seems to be that America's picking that up, meaning, hey, where the stock market came back, and they were all shocked because the media kept saying, you know, a calamity is here. Your thoughts on this approval rating jump?
Well, the approval rating jump is expected, right? If somebody sticks their thumb in your eye and then they take it out, you feel a lot better afterwards. So that's what happened in this case. Trump is still messing with the economy. Tariffs are still wrong. We're still in worse off than we were before his – I refuse to call it Liberation Day. Let's call it Destroy the World Markets Day. And it's not any better, right? Businesses have shut down. Businesses have shut down.
The stock market was – in fact, you did some podcasts on it. And real quick, guys, John has a great libertarian podcast, Liberty Lands and Free for All. But that's all you guys focused on was the stock market. Now,
absolutely.
So stick to the stock market.
I'll stick to the stock market. Absolutely.
You sat there and said that – I remember. Forgive me. But so I pinged John for some work or something. He goes, I'm sorry. I'm watching my 401k collapse. And I said – are you retiring next week? Because I just knew it was going to bounce back. And so the stock market has come back to where it was.
Why?
Same reason it dropped, you know?
Why? It dropped
because there is now some safety and some confidence in the markets. Why? Because of what these people are saying. A couple of there's deals in the queue. One deal's been done. That's why.
I will say that a lot of people in the market were wondering if this was like Big John just said, Destroy the Economic Markets Day, and then they realized, no, we're going to sign trade deals with other countries. We did with India, we did with UK, and we're on the way with China. So I think that's why people jump back in the market, which has been overpriced for over 4 years anyway. So I was hoping.
I don't buy that, G, because what we're seeing is actually a move towards Marxist central planning, and it's funny that it's coming from Donald Trump. We see that he thinks he's the one who decides where you should do business, with whom you should do business, and at what rate you should do business. We see that he's implementing price controls. These are moves that are more similar, whether people want to admit it in Republican circles, these are moves that are more similar to something you would see out of a socialist country or a Marxist country. It's more Chinese Communist Party than it is U.S. free market system. It's more communism than it is capitalism. Markets bounce back when Trump abandoned his tariffs. That's when it came back. All right.
Okay, guys.
I don't want to bog us down, so I'm going to have the last word. This is part of his strategy. John once again is looking at it from a static point. End of the world. It's not Marxist. He's negotiating. We had terrible tariffs deals. We were like $1.9 trillion in terms of the negative on tariffs. This is part
what
of
what negative?
Strategy.
What negative? When you say words, they should mean something.
In terms of what? Exactly. I wish. Listen to yourself next time you talk to us.
I believe every word I've used.
What was going out in terms of what they're taking from us versus what we're?
What are they taking from us? Tell me, what are they taking from us?
Money, $1.9 trillion in dollars.
They're selling stuff to us.
Hold on. They are selling to us. That's what they're taking from us. Trump is saying, that's fine. Take that. But we want some equality on the other side. That's what a deficit is. They are taking.
No, it's not.
Yes, they are. No. They are selling to us.
No.
We are buying. Now, you want that same treatment overseas, and that's not what's happening. That's what I mean by you, John. You got to look at the bigger picture. And
go, I am looking at the bigger picture.
All right, so let me ask something. Apparently, this wasn't the last word. So let me just ask one thing,
yeah,
John.
Sure.
So they are taking money. I agree with William. But wouldn't that money be better going to India instead of China, because China's rebuilding their military and they pose a bigger threat to the world's peace than India does?
No. First of all, the U.S. economy, despite what Trump will tell you, has not been taken advantage of by anybody. It's not floundering. The U.S. economy is by far the largest economy in the world by any metric that you want to choose. As a matter of fact, the U.S. economy is so big that if you took the next four economies, including China, including Japan, including Germany, if you took all the next four countries, they still don't add up to more than the U.S. economy. So
it matters because you don't want to look at the bigger picture.
How's that? Countries that had 0% tariffs on us.
Are you trying to tell me that the Soviet Union was not our enemy when we were growing up?
What does that have to do with anything?
It has everything. Just go along.
Why?
Yes or no? Because what's happening, China has become our Soviet Union on a different level. You just refuse to see on that. But let's keep going now. Let's keep going here.
I put this then in a larger perspective, Harry.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, this is just one poll, right? But let's take a look across an aggregate of polls. What are we seeing here? And I want to compare both to where Donald Trump is now versus where he was in late April, as well as where he was at this point in term number one. What you see is at minus 6 points, he is a little bit worse off than he is in the Ipsos Reuters polling, but he is considerably better than he was in late April when he was 9 points underwater. And more than that, look at this. He's nearly 10 points better than he was back in May 16th of 2017 in his first term. So what we see is Donald Trump's not just doing better than he was doing in late April of 2025. He's doing considerably better than he was doing at this point in term number one, about 10 points better than he was doing at this point in term number one.
You know, in a vacuum, minus six isn't good, but in Trumpian terms, you know, against himself, it's actually a pretty good position for him to be in politically compared to himself.
Exactly right. This is considerably higher than he has traditionally been.
So Trumpian terms, they're right now. He would probably be higher if he didn't have 92% negative media coverage against him. I still find it odd that CBS had Kamala during the election season at 100% positive coverage. John, what I want to hear from you is, why do you think the country's reacting, or Americans are reacting this way to him?
Well, overall, Americans are still reacting negatively to him. If you're asking me if he's improved at all, okay, yeah. Like I said,
I'm asking you, John, why Americans are 10 points positive over him.
What do you mean they're not? What's his overall approval rating?
10 points to the positive sector. He's taken 10 points. So I'm asking you why.
I thought I mentioned it earlier. It's because when someone has their thumb in their eye, they take it out, they feel better. So right now, a lot of the pain that was being caused by his policies has been alleviated. He backed off them. He's very much a populist. He saw people were turning against him, popular. Do you see what I'm saying? So, like, he's
I do, but ain't nothing. Let's go to you. Why is it 10-point swing?
Well, I think now people are looking at, well, Trump wants peace, so he went to the Middle East, and this occurred during his Middle East tour. He wants peace. He's trying to get commerce and not chaos, right? That was his tagline over there, commerce but not chaos in the Middle East. And he wants to make deals. Now, like we said, the art of the deal is to get 10% tariffs to be the new zero. And whether, you know, I'm sure Big John disagrees with that. I wish zero was a zero. But we know the other countries around the world are charging 10% tariffs on our exports. So that's just not a reality. But Trump, I think, will cause an economic boom. And I will say this. I was watching a PBS documentary about Trump winning the election in 2024. I should call it TDS, not PBS. But it was interesting because they were interviewing Brad Parscale, who was one of Trump's campaign managers in 2020. February 2020, he went to Trump and said, look, we did the internal polling. you have Reagan-style numbers in 1984 based on our polling. And, of course, a few months later, he came back in and said, you're going to lose this election, and he hasn't been back to the White House since. But that was based on what you saw in that clip just now, negative 17 net approval rating, and he was on track to have Reagan-style numbers. So I thought that was interesting because now his net approval rating is, what, net minus six, I believe. So
right.
I think if it goes on this track, then, I mean, the rest of the term will look good, provided that the economy goes up. So,
right, right. I think he if he goes on this track, I don't care about 3 years from now. I'm looking at the midterms. This has got to align with the midterms. And if it does, and if he can get China wrapped up, see, the whole key is this 90 days. He's going to have to do something with China because at the end of this 90 days is when we officially enter the 2026 cycle. And perceptions are already kind of built in. The seeds are planted, so he's got to do that. All right, let's keep moving here. Or else we're going to get bogged down. So I just want to keep us moving here.
So the big question here is why, Harry? Why, you know, why did it bottom out? Why might it be rising?
Okay, why? Well, take a look at the chance of a recession. It's actually falling. The chance of a recession is falling. In late April, it was 60% according to J.P. Morgan. Look at where it is now. It's less than 50%. How about Goldman Sachs? You see the same thing. 45% now falling to 35%. The bottom line is it is the economy, the economy, the economy. As the chance of a recession has fallen, as the trade wars have kind of collapsed a little bit, at least with China, Trump trying to make a deal, we do see that. I do think that the voters are responding to this, and therefore we're seeing Trump's approval rating going up.
The tariffs were really hurting him, and he...
All right, John, respond to Anton there in terms of he says the tariff wars that everybody predicted, including yourself, kind of not gone as you guys thought it would, a collapse.
Well, I disagree with you.
Well, not quite a collapse, but...
Yeah, I disagree with you. While his tariffs were in place, the economy suffered. Listen, I give Trump credit. Over the weekend, he said, wow, this China thing isn't happening. They're not blinking. So I'm gonna pretend like we came to this agreement and we're going to put a 90-day pause, keep tariffs still higher than they were in his first term, right? So tariffs with China are still higher than they were his first time around. He's got tariffs that he said he knocked off, but countries that didn't have tariffs with us, now we have tariffs against them. Australia comes to mind. They had 0% tariffs on U.S. goods. Trump slapped them with a 10% tariff because of that stupid formula, right? So, but to the overall point, which the markets liked, is last weekend, he said, hey, we're knocking it down to, what was it, 45%, 30% in some cases against China. And overnight, the markets rebounded on both sides because he knew this was unsustainable. And I think he had internal polling that told him, somebody got to him and said, hey, boss, this is nonsense. You're not ending up on the good side of this. People are suffering. Austin Peterson, who was a big MAGA supporter, started tweeting out, I didn't vote for this. I had to shut down my shoe business because of these tariffs. I shut them down last week. I could not sustain my business under these tariffs. So there were a lot of small business owners who were suffering. And I think that made its way back to President Trump, and he decided, and look, I give him credit. I've always said he's a populist. He has no principles. He just looks at what's the most popular thing for the people, for his base. And in this case, he said these tariffs are not working. Now, how they spin it is a different issue. Gotcha. The reason recession, you'll see the economy expand if the 90-day pause becomes permanent. Because even though it's wrong, it's better than what it was. And I think the economy is big enough where it'll restore itself.
Gotcha. Understand. Gee, your take on what Big John there said and what Anton's saying.
No, I agree in terms of the tariffs being paused, and I think there will be a deal done. But this was the Cuban Missile Crisis of economics, right? So how do you get both sides to back down while both sides save face? And you make a deal in the back room, and that's exactly what happened. So China wasn't going to come out and say, hey, Trump, we want to talk, and Trump wasn't going to do that either. But they kind of said, well, I'm open to talking. And they had some backroom deal saying, look, you drop your reciprocal, we'll drop our reciprocal. and everyone saves face. So that's what happened. I think the markets saw that, okay, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And part of the reason why the stock market was dropping is we don't know how long this tunnel is. Is it 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 5 months, 6 months, a year? That was the problem. So now there's a light at the end of the tunnel. We still don't know where the end of the tunnel is, but we know it's weeks away.
Right.
Mark, so, I was going to say, you're absolutely right. I'm sorry, William. I just wanted to tag what you said. You're absolutely right. Markets can be profitable if they're volatile, but they can't survive if there's uncertainty. And people sometimes confuse the two. Volatility, you can make money off of. Uncertainty, you really can't. And once the uncertainty got taken away, once the uncertainty got taken away, we still have volatility, but people are making money.
So what John, to the audience, what John means is when it's volatile, people are buying and selling, trying to take advantage of what's happening at that moment in time. But when there's uncertainty, it's kind of like we don't know what's going to happen, so you keep the money in the mattress. So this was the one thing I've always told people that you need to learn how to do is understand the bigger picture. And as I don't think G was prepared for our 2-hour podcast that I had laid out because I saw that bigger picture. And nothing goes according to plan per se, so you have a framework. And this was Scott Bessent's framework. China could not hold out. Oh, it's a communist party. It's this or that. You know, he's going to bury the people, doesn't care about them. He actually, it's not that he cares about them. He saw the bigger picture. Remember, China, we ain't going to talk. We just jacked ours up. And then they talked. Bessent saw this. He had their backs against the wall. That doesn't mean we did not have risk on our side. It's a calculated risk. That's what, see, people try to look at it black and white. Oh, this or that. It's a calculated risk. So we needed them to come to the table, but we were banking. They needed to come to the table first. And what's not being talked about in the mainstream media is that in this 90-day pause, what they did, I forget the term, but the red tape. So China actually does not have, before this trade war started, did not have a high tariff on any U.S. goods. What they had was the red tape. And part of that red tape included, we will own 51% of your company if your companies come here, but your goods going through tons of red tape. And it was too costly, thus we couldn't get our goods. That was actually removed for the 90 days.
Yeah, so that's our products
can flow in there. So for people to say we caved, no, we got something out of it right now. Did we get more out of it than China? I don't know. But that's a massive, massive win there that the mainstream media refuses to talk about.
This is all
part of the big game that's happening. And this is, we're in the third inning. This is part of the third inning. We came up the bat and we got a hit, and China had to conform to that. China needs us more than we need them. And here's the other thing: everybody mocked Trump. Oh, he's got this penguin island, you know, with the tariffs and all. And what Trump was doing is, because they caught China doing this through Malaysia. We talked about this, G. Their products that have been made, they try to slip them through Malaysia and stamp them as made in Malaysia, and they were caught. So this kind of protects everything. So I think Scott Bessent is right now, today, he looks like a genius. All this was planned. And when I say planned, I don't mean every dot, T's crossed, every I is dotted, but the framework, and we are where we want to be. I think these numbers here are a bonus. All right, let's move on to play John, it looks like you wanted to say something, John.
No, I was going to say, on that point, I agree with you. Like, the typical scam that gets run in China is that once your goods hit there, the Communist Party inspector has to come by and look at them. And, you know, that's a cost that's taken upon the shoulders of the exporter, not the importer, right? So they're not hitting you with a tariff per se, but it's almost like a mafia kickback scheme where the inspector has to come by and bless everything, and then they move on, right? So, you know, I agree with you to that extent. And, yeah, that to the extent that that got removed, yeah, and so that you know, you give credit where credit is due. That got done, you know. But
John, I don't mean to cut you off. You, John, to the audience, John and I are the worst. We'll keep talking and talking.
That's why I'm shutting up now. Yeah.
So I'm gonna play this, but real quick, I think the easy part's done. The hard part's this next 90 days, I think, with China. All right, let's keep going.
Helping him politically now.
Sometimes Donald Trump has some pretty good political instinct.
Oh. Challenging gents, I think that was a good. So, John, you do not like Trump. You are what I call a TDS, like a woman on 2 weeks before she's getting ready to give birth. And what do you think about his comment there at the end? Trump has political savvy.
Well, listen, I've never thought much of Trump. I've never thought he's a particularly smart man. I don't think he's a bright man. But I do agree that he has a certain connection and he has a certain charisma. And like in the sense that he's a political animal, sure, I could give that to him. So, yeah, I agree with that. Like, I mean, listen, the one thing Trump did to his benefit, not to mine or the country's in my opinion, but to his benefit, is that he chose loyalty over competency in this administration, right? So everybody is a super Trump loyalist. They don't care about anything else, right? So to that extent, he's also going to be more politically successful because he's got all his little soldiers in a row. Like, no matter what, right? So I think he'll succeed on that.
Gee, I want you to respond to, because John and I completely disagree. I value loyal. I will take somebody who's loyal. I can teach. I can groom. Not like the groom that's out there now, but groom and train because I know they're going to be there. They're going to work 110, 150%. I've had the sharp guys, and they don't last with me. They come and they go at the next opportunity. So he and I have a philosophical, completely different mindset on loyalty, especially coming from the small business. That's even more tantamount than, say, the corporate. What's your take on that? And then what's your take on Trump having what Enten said there at the end? He's politically savvy. And Armin will be joining us after this segment. To my friends, I want to thank Big Brother John. And John, before you leave, I want you to plug your shows. G, respond, please.
Yeah, so I think wow, that was quick, so I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, bringing people on my team. So whether I've hired people or just, you know, bringing people on my team, I look for a base level of talent, right? So that's where I start. I say, can you do the job? And then after that, I look for humility. If you have humility, that means, hey, I don't know how to do this. Can you teach me, right? Over someone who's really, really good and has no humility, then I'm just going to be battling that guy. So if two people can do the job, but this guy has a self-inflated ego of himself, it's like, no, I'll take this guy right here. So Trump doing that is smart, but he's also learned from term number one. He brought on people that were recommended to him by the establishment, the Republican establishment that now hates him. So I think he knows that he needs to choose loyalists who will enact his agenda, and that makes sense. Trump's not there just to fill the seat. He wants to get things done, unlike, sleepy Joe Biden. We're going to be talking about him pretty soon. But in terms of political astuteness, I would say that I agree because he won election in 2016 and then came back from the dead in just, 18 months and won a second election after a bunch of Democrats on a jury convicted him of bribery and all that. So to come back from that is amazing because you can't come back with the MAGA loyalists. You had to win the center. He won the center. He won votes. He won more Hispanic votes, and you can't do that if you're just relying on, you know, a bunch of white MAGA.
No, I think we agree on that, but I did notice a little sleight of hand. You replaced loyalty in your case study with humility, which, by the way, I agree with you when you use humility.
He has that. No, right? But Big John, politics is that world where to everybody, you want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be a leader, you want to be this, and John has seen it in me, sadly. I kind of warned him ahead of him. I don't show it because I try to have some humility, but you got to have that streak of arrogance. Confidence, but it errs on the verge of that. Now, these politicians, their study's been done. What's the term? Sociopaths. That they're all sociopaths. There is no humility in politics. And the final thing before John, I run you out is I learned because I look young. You know, I'm actually 89. No, I'm actually older, but I look very young. So when I would go into business deals, when I went to the NFL Network, when I went to Fox, they thought I was at least 10, 15 years, and they thought I was dumb. I sat there and I listened. Then I came with the contract. Here's our final numbers, period, end of story. Well, and they couldn't budge. And my point is Trump is able to relate to people like that, and that's how he comes across. Now, I'll say this about you, John. You may be right. Maybe he doesn't. But he wins. And, you know, G, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, just real quick. John's right. I didn't mean to replace loyalty with humility. As far as it goes with me, I prize humility. Trump prizes loyalty.
Absolutely. I agree with
but
you.
But Trump also prizes people who are arrogant. And that's fine. And I like the way he's doing things. But, you know, politics is different from the way I run things.
Yeah, but see, that's what I'm saying. I think there is no humility at that level. I think there are sociopaths. And with that, Big John, give us your pump up your two shows that you do so the audience knows.
Sure. Every Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, catch me on Free For All with my co-host Hody Johns. We talk about all things from libertarian perspectives, also internal party things of interest. And also every Wednesday, I sit with former vice presidential candidate Mike Termott, and we focus on one issue from a libertarian perspective every week. And that's called Liberty Lens, right here on Grumblings Media. And with that, I will exit. Thank you both for tolerating me, and I will put on our next guest.
John, we always love tolerating you. Hey, Armin, let's welcome Armin Kurt. Armin Curtin is our a retired United States Navy captain, so I say that proudly. We got somebody here with gravitas. How are you doing, Armin? And tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Happy Friday, everybody. Hey, Bill. Hey, G. It's great to see you guys again. Retired Navy captain, 25 years. I flew E-2C Hawkeyes while I was in the Navy. Also did a lot of work in program management and acquisition and test and evaluation, so and a lot of sustainment supplies, so kind of a jack of all trades coming out of the Navy and now trying to put food on my family's table right now over the last 7 years since I got out in 2018. So keeping busy, very active in the political world down in San Diego County on the Central Committee for the Republican Party and trying to keep the world safe for liberty and freedom.
Outstanding. And for the audience, we are going to move on, but before I close it out completely here, the rising approval ratings, it does indicate a shift in public perception. Voters are beginning to see a strategy regarding these tariffs, and they're more concerned, or a lot of them are realizing that we have to wait for the end game regardless of this negative narrative. This goes against traditional polling at this point in time in these type of scenarios. So Big John may be right in the sense that Trump's a populist, but people believe in him. And as we saw in the first, his first tour, gave us the greatest economy we've ever seen. I wasn't happy about the debt, but he did give us, and more importantly, the working class earned more faster than the white collar class. And that Scott Bessent himself has said that is the goal. So view this as a positive. We are only the third inning of this tariff game, and I'm not going to tell you, hey, 100% it's going to work out. But I see the strategy, the tactics, and I think if everything goes to form, we will be cruising into this next cycle with the bounce back economy. All right, so let's talk about Comey. James Comey's 86-47 post and Democrat hypocrisy, a threat to Trump and the truth. Look, guys, I always, as you guys have seen my notes, I get very deep, very deep. But I just want to get right down into it. And give me your thoughts on this. Let me pull it up here. Oops, that's the wrong one. Oh, guys, so let's start with you, G. I'll figure out how to do it here. Oh, Armin, we're on a new service here, so I'm still figuring my way out. So, G, your thoughts first on that 86-47 threat.
No, I mean, James Comey, so I view this guy as a bumbling, Homer Simpson wannabe of J. Edgar Hoover. I mean, he wants to be tough. He wants to look like, oh, I can, handle the FBI and all that, but yeah, he for the audience, the picture's not coming up, but he pretends, I think, in my opinion, he pretends to come across as 86-47. I personally think he actually made that himself and then took a picture. There it is. And he goes, oh, well, that's just a political message. I just found this on the beach myself. I'm sorry. My voice is giving out.
Okay, so, gee, I'm going to cut. I'll get back to you. But, Armin, your thoughts when you saw this image?
Why are we even still talking about this guy? I swear, I think he just wants to remain relevant. How can you possibly be in law enforcement and not know what 86 means? I mean, seriously. And this is like, oh, I wasn't sure I didn't really understand this. you know, this sounds like all, you know, MSNBC and CNN talking about, oh, we really didn't know how bad Joe Biden's dementia actually was. This is absolutely ludicrous. But, you know, frankly, it just goes to the larger narrative that I've seen with a lot of my friends, people that I know who are justifying their advocacy for violence and damage and hurt against conservatives, against the president, memes of Trump, you know, getting punched or attacked or, you know, applauding the fires at the Tesla dealerships. Good friend of mine. I thought she was an intelligent liberal, but obviously not, because she was trying to defend herself against this kind of thing. It's just part of this larger narrative. And Comey isn't really even a liberal. I just don't really understand what he was thinking when he put this up. But frankly, it's not even worth my time to even try. It's just a nature of the beast for these folks.
So, G, you want to finish your thoughts? And then He came out and said, he did, as Armin alluded to, he came out and said, I didn't know what it meant, people. FBI director, every Tom, Dick, and Harry knows what that means.
No, and I believe he also served time in the Marines or the Army, one of those two branches of the service. Those guys know what 86 means. It's actually a military term. So he should have enough awareness to go, okay, we've had a lot of political violent messages, like Kathy Griffin holding a head of Donald Trump. Yes. Remember that? Like maybe 8 years ago or 7 years ago. But even more recently, you had President Joe Biden on July 8th say, we got to put Trump back in the crosshairs. And what happened 5 days later? Somebody put him in the crosshairs of a rifle and shot at him. So it's irresponsible for a guy who, you know, I mean, he has followers, right? I'm not sure what political party he's a part of, but he belongs to some establishment, I'm sure. And behind the scenes, everyone knows where his loyalties lie. But some crazy person out there could take this as a signal, like it's time to go.
And, right.
You know,
right.
We did a show on JFK. We talked about Oswald and on the Red, White, and Rude. And my personal belief is Oswald had some connections with the CIA and someone gave him a go. So, you know, this could have been interpreted as that. So I think that's terrible that he did this.
Right. I was trying to cut you off to save your throat. That's what G is trying to say, there's, I don't know what the term is, maybe Armin knows, but there's a whole process of kind of getting the mob mentality going, planting those seeds. And as G stated, you know, Maxine Waters has said, we got to stand up physically. You're hearing the rhetoric. You're seeing Democrats. We're going to talk about it here soon in terms of getting physical. The BLM, $2 billion in property damage, murdered people. All that was condoned. The Bernie Sanders with the gun. All this, it puts the seeds of the nut job. Hey, it's my time. And that's what Comey is trying to do. It's not just Comey alone. It's the whole process. Your thoughts on that, Armin? And while you guys do that, again, new system, I'm going to pull up the next topic. Not topic, but point. Yeah. I want to reference.
Sure. I mean, the Albuquerque GOP headquarters office was firebombed. Governor Josh Shapiro, a Democrat, his home was firebombed. And let's not forget the whole bloodbath comment where everybody was just going off on Trump for talking about a bloodbath of American jobs, when in fact you go back and you see how many times they actually use that word themselves. It's become a joke up to this point, but there is a portion of the population that just, they only want to hear that. So, you know, call it a third of the population, 30 or 40% of the people in this country. That is what they want to hear. They don't care about the truth. They don't care about honesty. Violence, as far as the polling is actually out there, that political violence is okay with these people.
Right.
And we got to remember that when you're talking to some of these people, some of these, and they are lunatics. When you're talking to them, you cannot get through to them because they don't want to be got through to. And it's very intentional and malicious. So, care about your safety.
Right. As I've already alluded to, you see my notes. I have a whole episode I've been planning for about a month on fanaticism. And I think that's what a lot of liberals or Democrats have become, fanatics. And I'm going to, that's for a future episode. But I want you to, we got a military guy here. So I want us to comment on this real quick here. screen. Okay, so Armin, I want to get you first. So the media came out and said, well, Trump wished death on General Milley. You know, I highlighted here, this is what Trump said. So they're trying to compare this to defend Comey. And it's apples and oranges. This is an act so egregious that in times gone by, the punishment would have been death. He's talking about Milley reaching out to his Chinese counterpart and going behind the president's back, which, as you know, Armin, the president is at the end of the chain of command. And during wartime, that is execution. That is it. So am I wrong to say they are trying to compare apples and oranges? And he did not sit there and say 86 James Comey or assassinate James Comey or kill James Comey. What he was saying is these are the consequences for merely doing something like this. Your thoughts, Armin?
Well, the absolute best case scenario, if you were trying to frame this and with any kind of logic to it, would be this is really kind of what I was thinking, but at the best case, you are undermining the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, and it shows a fracture. And when generals and admirals start getting involved in making policy in the public forum, that is deadly for the military chain of command, absolutely deadly, because, you know, it echoes all the way down to the lowest enlisted person. And,
right.
You know, you're not sure what to actually think about it. This is a country, China, that has its eyes on Taiwan, its eyes on being the predominant regional power in Indo-PACOM, the predominant global power geopolitically on the entire planet. And you're basically going and undermining the president of the United States, saying, well, he didn't really mean this, or well, we're not really going to do that. That's not what our intention is. That is the absolute worst possible thing you can do. And it is in a lot of ways treasonous to actually go and do that. But at the very least, you know, it's a minimal MacArthur moment where, you know, you need to be fired for that.
Exactly.
Kind of stuff.
Exactly. So getting to G's point, G, you were talking about how people were, other acts, you know, as you said, Joe Biden in Sacramento behind, he liked to take Trump behind the gym. Kathy Griffin, a Central Park Julius Caesar play depicted a Trump-like figure, stabbed, losing, Maxine Waters in L.A., Madonna, the VMAs, talked about blowing up the White House. And you guys know this, but I'm saying it so the audience understands. This type of rhetoric is what has led up to the two assassination attempts. Snoop Dogg's video showing a Clown Trump shot. Remember that one? Cory Booker, New Jersey, encouraging activists to, quote, get up in the face of GOP lawmakers. Eric Holder, when they go low, we kick them. Ayanna Pressley, one of the worst, unrest in the streets. Nancy Pelosi labeled Trump officials domestic enemies. All this is the rhetoric. It has led up to the Bernie Sanders shooting, to these two assassination attempts. And one reason I got involved in politics is in the 1990s, I saw this coming. And it started with the race. And I didn't want to bring the South Africa topic. That's too heated. I don't want to put you guys in a tough spot. But that'll probably be a solo topic. And that has the negative to really blow up in this country if we don't get Democrats to understand you can't keep pushing that rhetoric. Now, final comment before we move on to the main topic here. We'll start with you, Armin. I think they should I agree with some of these free speech absolutists in taking Comey down for this, but I think they should be, this should remind them. James Comey lied under oath, and some Trump allies went to prison for lying under oath to Congress. I think they should go after him for lying under oath. Armin, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a huge double standard in terms of his testimony. And Republicans, Democrats who go in front of Congress and inveigle, obfuscate, and make false testimony. Let's remember that Comey started this whole trend about basically protecting those at the top with, you know, Hillary Clinton's emails. You know, there was classified information that was out there, some special access stuff, and they hid it, sent it via unclassified means. If it's the kind of thing that I had done, in my career in the Navy. At the very, very least, I would have gotten a letter of reprimand. I would have been drummed out. My career would have been over, let alone, you know, probably punished in some way. So, you know, his actions basically kind of opened the floodgates for bad behavior at the top, which is inexcusable. Honestly, though, but even the bigger picture, Bill, you know, lying in front of Congress, it's an art form. I mean, these congressional hearings that we've been saying, and maybe this is getting a little off topic, I don't even know why we even have them anymore. They're just a bunch of stunts and show times for folks to get their talking points. So, you know, the line in front of Congress is like,
I get you, Armin, but here's the problem. They will continue to go after a conservative for this. So once, if you go after Comey, you do this, you go after Brennan, I guarantee you it will stop. That's why I say do it. So back to the Stone Age here. Where was the outrage when Jack Posobiec and Matt Gaetz tweeted out 8-86-46 in 2022? I'll be honest here, Stone. That's the first I hear about it. But here's the thing about us conservatives, Stone, is he should be taken to the woodshed too for that. You can't sit there. But this is a product of the left continually doing it and conservatives getting frustrated. We keep our cool. Every once in a while, the Matt Gaetz and Jack Posobiec. Now, but Jack Posobiec, I'm a little surprised. Matt Gaetz, I'm not. Gee, your thoughts on the Stone Age? And he has another one here.
No, I get that. I mean, no, I disagree with that. I think that's terrible that anyone does that. whether you're saying 8646, 8647, or death to Biden or death to Trump, which is what that really means. No matter who does it, it's wrong, and we need to stop doing it. I do remember the Democrats. I mean, they went haywire when Alaska Governor Palin, she posted a picture, or I think it was a map of the United States with little bullseyes of races that we want to target, because those incumbents or those candidates on the Democrat side were weak. That's all that meant. It makes sense. But they are like, oh, she's putting out hits and targets on these candidates. Well, this actually does mean 8647, death to Trump. And 8646, and I'll just to back to Stone Age's point, I disagree with anyone doing 86 anybody. I mean, that's terrible.
Exactly, exactly. All right, guys, let's move on. I know Armin may have to leave here soon enough, so just let us know when you got to drop. But I wanted, this is the main topic of the night. So we all know about Biden's dementia. We've all known about it. You don't have to be a doctor. Let me explain to the audience here. Tens, if not hundreds of millions since the founding of this nation have seen dementia. Because we see it in our family members. You don't have to be a doctor if the term is innately. You just start to pick that up over time. I worked in that industry. I saw Joe Biden in 20, I'm like, there's something wrong. That's where it starts with the loved ones. There's something wrong. Honey, you're starting to forget this when you get, so it's something you innately pick up. There are books now coming where the media, and at the correspondence dinner, they had the audacity to go, we can't be fooled like that again. We can't. I'm like, what the bleep? I mean, what the bleep? So Jake Tapper and Alex something, the guy who was in the White House correspondence dinner, a book is coming out, and they're playing the Trump card that we didn't know. The admin lied to us. Gene, let's start with your thoughts, and we'll go to Armin. And while you're doing that, I'm looking the video up.
That is absurd. I could see clearly in 2020, in 2021, that Biden was having problems getting his message out. You don't have to sit there and meet someone right off the bat and go, okay, there's something wrong with this guy. But it's easier when this guy's been in the public eye for 50 years, and most notably since, what, the mid-2000s when he started working. I mean, he actually used to work with Republicans quite often and the Bush administration. He was a pro-Iraq war hawk. But you could see how he would talk in public then, and he was very articulate. His stutter was more in the 1970s and 80s, but by the 2000s, very articulate, very charismatic, although he was kind of a goofball, and Obama said, never underestimate Joe messing things up. But
is that what he said?
Well, no, right. That's the clean version of it. I got kids in the house, so. But But yeah, then you fast forward to 2020, and it's like, there's something wrong with this guy. And clearly, right. He never used to go pointing to where he needs to go. And you know, handlers off screen are saying, come here, come here.
Exactly.
Oh, so, okay, so, that's where I need to go.
With that, G, let's get to a video. While I'm bringing that up, Armin, your thoughts.
Yeah, well, you know, President Biden and her husband are out there doing the nobody asked for this media tour right now. You want to go all the way back to 2012, the vice presidential debate between Biden and Paul Ryan, where they were going after Mitt Romney for something, you know, that he said. And Ryan told the vice president, well, as I'm sure as you know, sometimes the words don't come out right. And, you know, that was pretty much the end of that. But honestly, this whole thing about dementia, I think they knew it going into it, but I think they hit it not necessarily because they cared about Joe Biden, but because they believed that they could have a mouth breather in the White House.
Yes.
And you could have a cabal of individuals who basically would just tell him what to do and what to say. He was basically a puppet. He was a puppet,
right,
with somebody's hand up his back, and whatever they say, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And then that's why they kept him away from the press, so he wouldn't have to answer questions and contradict, you know, his own policy.
Right.
The national security implications for this country are beyond imagination as to what,
right,
could have actually transpired. So.
Right. So there's one video I want to show you here in terms of where'd it go? In terms of Joe, his allies protecting him. And here, we'll watch it here.
He is sharp, intensely probing, and detail-oriented and focused.
This is a man who is sharp, who is on top of his game, who knows what's going on.
This guy's tough. He's smart. He's on his game.
His mental acuity is great.
This is a very sharp president.
This is a man that's on his game.
President Biden is absolutely fit.
There's not a problem.
He's sharp. He's fit. He's always answering questions.
He is on the ball.
He was sharper than anyone I've spoken to.
He is sharp. He is on top of things.
There's no doubt in my mind that the president is mentally fit for office.
Biden has proven himself to have a strong memory.
He's completely mentally sharp.
He's at the top of his game.
I just had to show that because this tells me this was coordinated. Now, we can't do anything about this. Actually, we probably can't do anything about anything of this. But am I wrong to look at that and says the wording? There's like the talking points were sent out. And this, to me, the cover-up was in. But I want you guys to comment on that. But more importantly, G, starting with you, should figures like Jill Biden or others in the administration face consequences? I believe we should have some kind of investigation. This is the leader of the greatest nation on the world today, period. This nation has uplifted more human beings than any other. You know, I think it's like we elected Joe Biden, but we don't know who the hell was running. Please push back if I'm looking at this wrong. G.
No, I think in terms of the wording, he's fit, he's sharp, he's strong. The talking points went out there. And I will also add Joe Scarborough saying, this is the best Biden I've ever seen, strongest ever. When did he say that? I think it was March or April of 2024, just about 12 months ago. So, that was the cover-up, absolutely. But in terms of going after him, no, I don't think so, because the American people also could see that. I mean, I saw it. I mean, they were gaslighting us. No, you can't do that. What you're seeing is not really true, but I'm not easily gaslit. So I'm looking at that going, this guy is we're going to have a President Kamala Harris pretty soon. That's what I was thinking, because this guy's not going to survive. But we didn't go after FDR. We didn't go after JFK. Well, you know, and they both had serious diseases. Obviously, FDR was in a wheelchair after polio and JFK, Addison's disease. But, you know, they get elected. Once they're elected, we all – at least in Biden's case, we all saw the dementia, and Some of us said, no, I don't want to see it because I hate Trump so much. And the rest of us said, I see it, and that's not right.
No, I get that. Armin, before you give us your take here, I want to, since G requested one of the good old classics, I am here to provide it.
Start your tape right now because I'm about to tell you the truth. And F you if you can't handle the truth. This version of Biden, intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever. Not a close second. And I've known him for years.
That's the one you were referring to, wasn't it, G?
Yeah. That's it.
So Armin, do you agree with G? Should we or shouldn't we do an investigation to go after... I mean, my take is I look at all the pardons. I'm like, no, something needs to be investigated here.
So I will say this much. There needs to be exposure and hearings on this. Now, I don't know if you can actually charge anyone with a crime on this. I don't know whether that would be beneficial. But this has to be brought. This is a legitimate congressional inquiry. This is our modern-day Watergate, probably even worse. Because at least Richard Nixon knew where he was and knew what day of the week it is. What you have here was, like I said, was a guy who was simply a mouthpiece, was only there. Look at all these pardons that he did. The auto pen. How do we even know he even signed those things?
Right. Well, that's my issue. That's my
a legitimate
issue.
Question. Like, did he really sign them? Did he really know that he signed these things? Did he have memory of signing them? I don't know that those pardons are valid. That is a legitimate question. And they need to bring these folks who were in the White House, who saw them, bring in the cook, bring in the chef, bring in the stewards, okay? I don't care, bring the show, bring them all in and ask them questions. You know, you need to ask them real questions.
So I want to shift here real quick to the media. So the media is coming out now and they're saying that he had us fooled. I believe he was running cover. And Jake Tapper says originally he was saying, I did not run cover for them. Now he's saying, well, maybe I should have been. But here is the video that created the most devastating backlash for him. Because when people saw this, I think it's what's that saying? The emperor without – they saw the emperor without clothes. Because that's how harshly Jake Tapper attacked Laura Trump. And he came across looking poorly. And I want to play this here.
Every time he comes on stage or they turn to him, I'm like, Joe, can you get it out? Let's get the words out, Joe. You kind of feel bad for him.
How do you think? Okay, so he's talking there what we all see, somebody who's slow, odor, forgets what he says. And so this kind of came out of nowhere because we're all old enough to know that Joe Biden had a stuttering problem he overcame. I was a Joe Biden supporter back in 1987, the first politician I ever saw. And you heard about his stuttering one time, then you never ever heard of it ever since until right around here.
I think it makes little kids with stutters feel when they see you make a comment like that.
First and foremost, I had no idea that Joe Biden ever suffered from a stutter. I think what we see on stage with Joe Biden, Jake, is very clearly a cognitive decline.
Okay.
That's what I'm referring to. It makes me uncomfortable.
This is so amazing. It's so amazing to me
and try and figure out an answer.
A cognitive decline.
Well,
okay, so real quick before I go on here is Laura Trump probably doesn't have any clue because the family was not in politics at all. During that whole reign. So this is probably the very first time, because when I heard him say that, I was like, oh yeah, he does have a stuttering problem. I forgot all about that.
Tell me that what I was suggesting was
I think
stuttering.
That you were mocking his stutter.
Idea,
yeah, I think you were mocking his stutter, and I think you have absolutely no standing to diagnose somebody's cognitive decline. I would think that somebody in the Trump family would be more sensitive to people who do not have medical licenses. Diagnosing politicians from afar. Plenty of people have diagnosed your father from afar, and I'm sure it offends you. Your father-in-law from afar, I'm sure it offends you. You don't have any standing to say.
I'm not diagnosing him. What I'm saying, Jake,
you just talked about a cognitive decline.
that Joe Biden
I have one last question for you, Laura. You can't
times on stage, and it's very concerning to a lot of people that this could be the leader of the free world.
Okay.
That is all I'm saying. I genuinely
you,
feel
Laura,
sorry for Joe Biden.
Okay, she Jake was not a journalist there. He was a pro-Biden supporter. And I'm going to say this up front. Yes, Jake, I will diagnose it. I worked in the industry, and I'm not a damn doctor, but I've been around it enough. I've seen too many people enough. The average person, that's why I started out the segment, can innately see that. So, and as far as the Trump, there's a difference between flat-out lies as the media was doing on Trump. You look at Trump today. The guy, I don't know how he does it. I'm not saying that to pump him up. I'm like, at his age, he should be slowing down, and he's defying those odds. So Jake took one issue of Joe Biden, and he blew it up to put everything down. Now he has a book coming out that says he was fooled. Gee, do you think the media was fooled? And secondly, do you think everything's cyclical. How long will it take before they're able to come back from this debacle?
I mean, I can't tell you whether they're fooled or not, but I know what I could see was plain as day, and I'm not an insider, right? I'm just a guy who sits at home and watches the debate. So I find it really hard to believe that they had no, like, suspicion. And you know what? I was a guy, I'm sure all three of us have watched Joe Biden in the debates in 2007 against Obama, and he was actually very articulate and actually made some clever hints that, hey, Obama's gay. At one point, Obama had to say, with women, right? I don't know if you recall that moment, but he's like, with women. And then in 2008 when he was debating Palin, and then in 2012 when he was debating Paul Ryan, he was articulate, he was sharp, he was everything that those media guys were saying. I mean, you could ascribe that to 2012 and 2008, but 2020, you're looking at him going, wait a minute, this guy, he has a mental problem, like, you know, medically. And, but he was able still to string thoughts and ideas together. But I think, I remember that first debate when Trump was just interrupting him and throwing him off his game. Well, I think Trump was trying to get him to fumble up and collapse like he did last year in that debate. I think that was his goal, and it backfired on Trump, made Trump look like a bully, and I think that really doomed Trump's campaign in 2020. But I think Trump knew. He saw it. I think a lot of people saw it, but the mainstream media guys like Jake Tapper probably just did la, 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 la.
Right. I agree. Armin, your thoughts on this? Oh, well, hold on. Gee, so how long do you think the media will take to come back? Then we'll go right to the Armin.
I mean, it will take a long time. I mean, people have gone to podcasts, YouTube, Pandora, Spotify.
No, so, I agree. I think this is a devastating blow. Armin, your thoughts?
MSNBC, CNN, New York Times, Atlantic. These publications have zero credibility. And the only people who are really kind of watching them are there's two kinds of people. One, the people who want to live in an echo chamber. And two, maybe some of the pundits on the conservative side just to try to look at them, just to try to get ammunition on how to go after these guys. That credibility is gone. I don't think it's ever going to come back. And, you know, when we're talking about these debates, I'm about 95% convinced that the early timing of the debate in 2024 was intentional, because there might have been a few folks who were, you know, gently saying, hey, let's get it in there. We'll get Trump. We'll get him early. Let's do it in June. Let's knock him out, land him a death blow early on. Intentional to get him out on a national stage, knowing that he would fail, to get him out of the race, because they were already seeing those numbers start to go. And you remember, at the worst point, it was down to 46-41 in favor of Trump. Virginia was in play. New Hampshire was in play. A lot of these other states, you know, Illinois was 5 points. Yeah, Jersey,
right,
they were close.
Right.
No, Trump was going to win 40 states.
Yeah, no. A lot of friends of mine were in play because they were like, man, that guy can't think. So, Armin, you brought up the debate. I am here to bring the good old classics to the audience.
Back to office. And I'm going to continue to move until we get the total ban on the total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more Border Patrol and more asylum officers.
President Trump?
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either.
That was one of the nicer ones. Because of time, I skipped quite a few of these, but I had some nice ones lined up. And you're right, Armin. I don't know why they did it. I'll be quite honest. There's a lot of theories we can all talk about, speculate. One of them being is this was his test run. If he could get past this, they were going to ride him up to Election Day because, remember, there was no other debate guaranteed. I think they had one, but they were arguing about it. So I think they were good. I think had he done better, it would have gone to the basement. I like that. You raise your hand, G. What's up?
Yeah. So I read this book, and it was an interesting read, and I read it within a week's period. But it's called Fight, Inside the Wildest Battle for the White House. And in it, I mean, the authors, they're more left-wing or whatnot, but they interviewed a ton of insiders. And I thought, like Armin did, that someone set up Biden originally. But at least in the book, they claim that Biden in the internal polling was so far behind Trump that they had to change the narrative. Everything they were doing, nothing was working. And it was right. The Biden camp. Some of his advisors said, we need to change the narrative. Let's have a strong debate. And boom, we'll change the narrative before the summer. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. Armin's theory, which I shared that theory as well, could be true. But at least that's what the book claims.
Right. So I think we have one more person we have to worry about here real quick. And I want to get your thoughts on this individual here. I'm kidding, guys. I couldn't resist. That's Debbie Dingell at a hearing. And for the audience, Debbie Dingell's husband held his chair for like 50 some odd years. She pretty much inherited it because of name recognition. And before that, his father, you know, Dingell's father, she's a joke. She was one of the ones on that film there. And we have one more segment, but Armin has to leave. Any final words on this issue here, Armin, before you go?
Yeah, Joe Biden on his best day, on his five best days combined, could not have, in his wildest dreams, hoped to accomplish what Donald Trump did this week in the Middle East. Even some of Trump's biggest critics, folks who were in the previous administration, are amazed as to what he accomplished this week. I'm amazed as to what he accomplished this week, as well as the welcome that he actually got. And I think the American people, they this kind of, you know, chutzpah, this kind of projection of power and strength is what Americans want to see. Because being the president, honest to goodness, it's more about your ideology, it's more than about your beliefs, and it's more than about your policy. It's about being a leader and a chief executive of this country. And Trump went out this week, and he did it. And, you know, we talked about those polling numbers going back up. At the end of Trump's second term, we're going to have an economy that's just as good, if not better, as it was at the beginning of 2020. This country is going to be strong. It's going to be well-respected. And I think we're on a really good path right now.
I agree. I think we're at a point now, if this plays out well with the tariffs, we're going to have a booming economy. And it's not a guarantee yet, people. But based off what I researched, based on what I've seen, we don't screw it up. And Trump has got some good people in there who are loyal to him. And let's be honest, so far, they're starting to deliver. And with that, Armin, I want to thank you for coming on. G, stick around. We have one more topic. But I hope to have you on our Fired Up California. Armin is involved here in California politics. I always hem and haw because I don't like to get people involved because, as G can tell you, I can be really, harsh. I mean, just on point with y'all screwing up, and I'm not talking about Democrats. I'm talking about our own party, you know. So I don't
That's
like to put people,
too.
But I'd like to bring you on there sooner than later. And thank you for coming on. Have a great evening. And before people go, where can they find you? What are you up to politically?
So you see, I'm down there on Instagram at Real Armin Kurdian. I'm also on LinkedIn. You can find me as well. And I do regular media appearances on News Nation, on NTD News. Fox 5 DC. I just did a Newsmax hit yesterday as well. So I'm up and around. I'm on TV. I'm spreading the good word.
Outstanding, outstanding. And with that, sir, we bid you adieu, and you have a great weekend.
Hasta la pasta.
Bye-bye. All right, G, we got one more segment. I don't want to I'm going to cut the segment. I just want us to look at the video, and then I want you to comment. I'll comment a quick three-minute segment to close it out. And
let me just have one final word on the Joe Biden thing.
Right, go ahead.
And I will say the most dangerous fallout, the most impactful fallout of hiding his dementia and getting him into office is the Ukraine-Russia war. He was so out of it, he could not go and negotiate. Back in February 2022, he had to send Kamala Harris to Germany,
right,
or was it Poland, to negotiate because the Russian troops were on the border. And what does she say? We reaffirm Ukraine will join NATO at
yes.
some point. And that was enough for Putin to go, well, I'm invading. And
yep.
that failure of foreign policy goes right back to Biden was sitting at home, probably, you know, literally vegging out. And Kamala Harris, thank God we dodged a bullet this time around. Kamala Harris going out there to, you know, with foreign policy. What a disaster.
So that's saying, who let the dogs out? That was Kamala letting Putin troops go out. All right. So this next segment, our final segment, to the audience, I'll talk about this more in depth in the following weeks. But right now, Delaney Hall debacle, where there was physical assaults. And to the audience, I know this from actual experience in the military. A physical assault is literally touching another guy against their will, legally speaking. Now, courts aren't going to really recognize that, but technicality, that's what illegal assault is. And Representative LaMonica McIver, a Democrat, freshman Democrat congresswoman, at this point should have had federal charges brought up on her for assault. As we talked about earlier, it just keeps going and going. People emboldens them. They did this, what the media is not stating, they did this in December. Nothing happened. They ramped it up this past week. And Trump, I think what happened when Trump saw his allies are not being taken to court, when they tried to take him down off a really flimsy at best lies, most of it, I think he said that the kid gloves are off. But he's not just going after people. He's waiting for them to screw up. I have a belief with John. I tell him, I go, I always let people hang themselves. Not because I want to. I give them every opportunity. So I'm forced to finally cut the cord, and they come crying to me. I go, no, you did this. I give you every opportunity. And I think that's what Trump is doing here. Once they legally screw up, he's not pulling any punches. So I want to show this video, get your take on it, and we'll go from there. This is at the ICE detention center. It is run by GEO, Global Expertise in Outsourcing. So my impression is it's run by a third party. But here we go. She is the individual in red. That's the other thing. If you're going to go do something like this, don't stick out like Santa Claus. Right there, see the punch throw. All right, G, so that was assault, legally speaking. Again, I know that from experience dealing with a cop in a negative situation where I was at fault. And
back in your sailor days.
Exactly, sadly, yes. So my point here is this is an escalation. When the mob sees the congresswoman or man doing that, and the mayor was also, it kind of gives them permission to join in the fracas. And that's why I think Trump stopping this now with charges being put on there will kind of the others go, I don't want to go to jail, et cetera, et cetera. Because if not, we're going to have BLM 2.0. And I think the Democrats are in some ways informally planning that, hoping that happens. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you were sorry. You were talking about the political violence, right? Just because you're an elected official doesn't mean you can now attack people and be immune for prosecution. That doesn't make any sense. But like you said, if an elected official does it, then that means anyone else can do it. And you can start riots and all that. So I think Trump is good to nail this in the bud and say, look, you can't do that. And even if you think something is wrong, you still can't do that. Meaning they think ISIS, what do they call them? The KKK or whatever, some garbage like that. Like, no, even if you think it's wrong, you still can't attack people. Assault can put you in jail, physical assault. And that applies to regular people and elected officials.
I agree. I think that Trump is doing the right thing. He's got to de-escalate this. And like I said, you de-escalate it by holding people accountable. That's what I meant by getting James Comey on the line to Congress. That'll de-escalate Democrats just going after them. We cannot become a country that we flee from. I saw two dictators play this type of stuff. Every immigrant will tell you. Dave Smith was on Joe Rogan debating, I forget the English guy. And the English guy was right, but he kind of destroyed his whole premise. When everybody has a right to their opinion. Like Big John, he has a special needs child. Douglas Murray, it was Dave Smith arguing, debating Douglas Murray. Like, so I defer to John on because of special needs. I mean, that's not my expertise, so I defer to him. But I will give my opinion. Now, where Douglas Murray was wrong is he kind of tried to imply nobody has a right to an opinion if they're not an expert. And that's totally wrong. And I bring that up because the average American, you can sit there and say everything you want. You were born and raised in luxury compared to a lot of third worlders who flee their countries to come here to law and order. So we do have insight we can contribute. And pretty much every immigrant will tell you, G, what we've been seeing happening since the turn of the century, not just since Obama got elected, it kind of exponentially ramped up, is this. And that's a country in chaos. And 70% of the country is still calm. Haven't helped this country with 70%, the Latinos, the Anglos, the Asians. If that 70% loses it, then it's going to be complete chaos, murder, and mayhem. And we've got to stop that. So I'm hoping this can nip it in the bud. She's a freshman congresswoman. If this is how she starts out, imagine how she'll be 4 years from now, 8 years from now. I'll give you the final word, and then we'll close it out.
Yeah, I've been watching these series on Vietnam in 1968. And for a lot of the modern Democrat Party, they look at 1968 in the activist wing, which was like the extreme wing back then, but now is the mainstream of the Democrat Party. They look at that as the glory days, right? The Weather Underground and all these different factions, the hippies and the yippies. Like, and so I think that's what they're trying to recreate here, not realizing that that group back then was despised by the silent majority, right? Nixon's silent majority, and still is today. We want law and order. We want peace. We want discourse and not violence. So I don't know what she's learned in her college upbringing or whatnot, but this is not the right way to go about it.
Oh, gee, I'll tell you what she learned. So as I was growing up, I was part of the catch-all because nobody knew I was Latino. But I remember all my Latino friends, it was a drain off from Black America, the victim. It's not your fault. It's always an excuse made for failures, for this, for that. It's okay for what you're doing because it's not your fault. And all that has done over the last generation is embolden a whole class of people to the point now they're becoming violent. And all minorities, not just, I'm talking about Blacks, but Latinos are a big part of this too, where I committed violence, but it's not my fault because I'm the victim. And that has to end for the betterment of this country. And we need Democrats to kind of lead that charge because it's Democrats that are actually allowing it and emboldening people. Any comment? I said the last comment, but any comment on what I just said?
No, I agree. Sorry, my voice is giving out.
All right, perfect. Yeah. And with that, my friends, we have called it a show. From Trump's tariff triumphs to Comey's cryptic threats, Biden's hidden decline, and Democrat ICE assaults. Woo! What a show! It reveals a political landscape where truth battles spin. Accountability is overdue, my friends, and luckily, voters are waking up to begin demanding it. I want to give thanks to Big John, our producer and our early on guest. Make sure you check out his show, Free for All. It's Libertarian Talk. That's every man's show there where they bring everyday topics. And then he has what I call the intellectual show with Liberty Lens, where he brings the former vice presidential nominee for the Libertarian Party, Mike Chermat, on. And they pick a topic and they talk about that. So Free For All and Liberty Lens. You can catch those at grumblingsmedia.com along with this show and my other shows, grumblingsmedia.com. And for FYI, we have our 50th episode coming up for the Red, White, and Rude. And, gee, real quick, your friend Adam that you turned us on to will be a guest to talk a little conspiracy. The Red, White, and Rude is our culture and politics and how, politics is downstream. That is culture. What happens culturally eventually affects politics. Big John will be on there and the beautiful Miss Annette Ross will be on. Big John's going to handle comedians and Annette Ross, we're going to talk some Hollywood. So before I go, once again, bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and you can follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora under the handle Grumblings Media. For a Big John, G, and Armin, I am William Del Pilar for Fired Up. Until next time, my friends, keep your fire gear nearby because the Democrats and mainstream media never stop. But Fired Up is here to return the heat with some truth.